Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
Guys, I'm feeling great largely because I had a great night's sleep on my Casper mattress. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. The mattress industry has inherently forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly onto you, the consumer. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. Casper's mattress is one of a kind, a new hybrid mattress that combines premium memory foam with latex foam. Named as Time's Best Innovation of 2015, the Casper is the most awarded mattress of the decade. Guys, this is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Two technologies, latex and memory foam, come together to get you a great night's sleep. There's a free risk trial and a return policy. Try sleeping on a Casper mattress for 100 days. And if you don't like it, they will take it back and they will give you your money back. You have 100 days. There's nothing else in the retail world that you get to try out for over 3 months and you can return it. The Casper is now the most awarded mattress of the decade. Go to CasperTrial.com/Chael. Enter 50 sleep when you check out and you will get $50 off any mattress. Now, let's start the show.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. What are you smiling about? What is this? I don't get it.
This is the song you think of when you think of Daniel Cormier.
Oh, where does that come from? Will you turn it off? I get the song now. Wind Beneath My Wings. That's what you're so giddy over there?
I've been waiting for the show. I've been waiting for the show for months.
Where does that come from that you act like I just love DC? Where does that come from?
I forgot. We would have to go back and see, but once I got on the bit, I couldn't get off the bit. I think it just started by you roasting everybody in the world except Daniel, Coker, or Dana. Everybody else is fair game. And I think it started with there. It started with that. And I've had fun with it. But can you see yourself?
Where the Daniel
can you
love
see yourself,
comes from?
Can you see yourself listening to Wind Beneath My Wings? That
Still
song,
not there.
Whatever that
Wind Beneath My Wings.
Yeah, well, you would know because
that's funny when you said that song.
Yes,
you got yourself out of that.
You did.
Thank that was
you.
Good.
So
I just don't know where it comes from. I don't know what glowing love or support you think I show for Dan. I don't know where that comes
well,
from.
Well, we're going to find out here in a second when you pick him as the winner. Why you love him so much.
I do pick him as the winner,
mm-hmm.
but I base that on history. These guys fought once, so I have that frame of reference, and Daniel won. These guys are going to do the exact same thing, which is to fight under the same rules at the same weight class for the same time period. It's the exact same thing. So that's where I base it. That doesn't make me right. I have seen sport that goes the other way. But when I pick Daniel as the winner, that is not a glowing, blinded view of Daniel for some love for him that you say I portray. And it's also not because I don't recognize Anthony Johnson as the single scariest guy in the sport, any weight class. I do. But they already fought. I have that frame of reference. I saw the match. Daniel won, so I picked Daniel again.
Well, let me ask you this.
I'm not insisting that he wins because he won the first time. It's just my pick.
When you used to work with Daniel at Fox and you knew he was on set, would you check your hair before you went out there?
Oh, for goodness sakes.
All right, let's get to the fight.
I just gave my breakdown of it. I mean, that's really all I got.
We've got an hour.
Daniel has to go out and wrestle. That's not a secret anywhere. I trust that he will. Something that Daniel does very well is the basics. He buries that chin. You know, I've talked about Kelvin Gastelum on this show and told you how good his defense is, in part because he's a fantastic athlete, but in part, the one thing he was born with was defensive skills. When Kelvin puts his hands up, the way his body is built, it forces his shoulders up to where it buries that chin of his. You can't get to that damn chin. It's the one gift that Kelvin really has that I don't think enough is made of, but Daniel has that same build. When Daniel's hands go up, it pushes his shoulders in front of his chin. He's just really hard to hit. So I think you would agree with me. You're about to give your breakdown in a second. It sounds like you're going the opposite way with Johnson. But it seems to me you would have to agree, if Johnson's going to win this fight, it's not going to be the wrestling, so it's going to be at the striking, and Daniel's just really hard to get to. That's just my analysis. I don't know who's going to win that fight, but if I had to give a pick based on history and based on the point I just made, I mean, that was a really good analysis by me. It's Daniel. Now, Daniel got clipped last time, but he did show that he could take it. It sent him head over tea kettle, but he came back up to his feet and continued the match. I think it's relevant.
I mentioned that at some point down the road, I'm gonna think Connor has a chance in this boxing match that they haven't announced because of the promotion. I watched the UFC 210 countdown a couple days ago, and Daniel is brilliant in some of the things that he does. His confidence, if I was fighting him, that confidence that he has would be annoying. He's like, listen, I'd fight Rumble at the parking lot. I'd fight him anywhere, and I'm going to beat him every single time. Then they went to the fight, the tape, where in the third round, his coaches start yelling, or no, he hears him at the end of the second round. He hears Rumble's coaches telling Rumble, don't quit. And when DC heard that, he got a big boost. He's like, there's never a chance on earth my coaches would ever tell me not to quit. That's never going to happen. And then you can see it. You can actually see Rumble quits. He gives him his back. He gives him his neck. He literally quits. So I started watching that, and I'm like, oh no. Now I got to go against what I've been saying for 6 months. I don't. I believe Rumble wins this fight because he's gotten better. He's younger, and he's learned from it. He's not going to go out and blow a gasket in the first 30, 45 seconds. If he does get taken down, he's been working with Neil, how he's going to compose himself, stay in good position, and get back to his feet. I believe Rumble takes DC out in the third round.
All right, I have a couple of problems with what you said. And first, so you want to talk about quitting it and Rumble. Yes, he will quit. A lot of fighters will. But here's the deal on that. It's not because they're quitters. It's the kind of athlete they are. If you go for a finish, you are not going to win a decision. That is a fact of boxing and MMA. If you're a guy that goes out and tries to finish the fight, you will not win the decision. Now, the point being is you're not going to have anything left. If you're a guy that goes on a sprint and uses all that energy, brings that storm, and usually there's nobody left standing. Mike Tyson was one of those guys. Mike Tyson had quit all the time late in the fight, but it wasn't because he was a weak guy. It's because he was one of those kinds of powerful athletes that exerted himself so hard early on trying to get the finish. Usually did. Led him to world championships, but if it didn't, if that tree was still left standing after you brought the storm, there wasn't going to be anything left. He was going to quit. He didn't have the endurance for it. Anthony's that same way. He comes out and he brings a storm, and there's usually nobody left standing. But if there is, he doesn't have anything left to make it for that marathon that is these fights. You know, boxing, 36 minutes, ridiculous amount of time. In fighting, 25 minutes. That's a ridiculous amount of time. You can't get your point across in less than 25 minutes. So, yeah, there is some truth to that. Now, you said something, though, that I want to pick on. You said, I think he learned from the first fight and he's going to essentially preserve himself. I don't know what word you use, but he's going to preserve himself. Joel, if he doesn't fight the way he fights, which is to go out and bring that storm and trust that that's enough, if he tries something different on live television in the middle of a world title fight against the champ, that can't be good. That's not, you got to dance with the one that brought you. A world title fight is not the time to experiment. Do you disagree?
I see what you're saying. Don't mix up. He's still going to be very aggressive and try to take his head off. But in the first fight, when you go back and watch it, he kept trying to finish the fight, whereas he could have got his gas tank back a little bit. By the time the third round came around, he was shot. And there is no worse feeling on the planet, aside from, crazy, crazy stuff, than as a competitor being completely gassed out.
There's nothing worse.
It's painful. And the fear, see, here's what people don't talk about. The fear of that is almost as bad. The fear of being exhausted. There's only a handful of athletes that can fight through that and continue to compete. I remember you and I being at one of Randy's fights. I think it was the second Pedro fight. And, he did his warm-up, like on the Thursday or the Friday. And he came to you and he said, I'm getting really upset because I'm getting tired. And then he stopped and he said, I should be tired. I'm going to be tired.
Yeah.
Kind of making friends with the enemy. But the fear of that, the fear of getting tired and being gassed out, it's what wrestlers go through. A lot of wrestlers go through it. They don't think they can keep a kind of pace that somebody's has. And then they're in the middle of a firestorm and they quit. You break a guy. And Daniel talked about that, how much he enjoys breaking people.
Yeah, and you say that is for fighters. That's for humans in general, but most people don't ever have to experience. There's not a whole lot of walks of life where you have to get completely exhausted and then you're vulnerable and being under attack. And you're right. It is a terrifying experience to go through, but it is terrifying once you go through it to ever be there again. You will see some guys in absolute wars. I mean, I'm talking for the record books, classic fights, and they'll never, ever have a match like that again. And people will say, well, he really peaked there, and now he's in a valley, and it's hard to get back to that spot. They're all wrong. The psychology, they're totally wrong. That's not what it is. What it is that was that athlete's first time ever breaking through that wall of exhaustion, and he never wants to go back. It's not that he's now in a valley or he's having a low. It's that one experience that made for a classic and fantastic, memorable night was so draining and so difficult, he doesn't want to go back there. And it's something very hard for athletes to get through. And it's something very hard for the average person to relate to because it's a spot that you don't have to find yourself in. And you shouldn't. You weren't put on this planet to do that. Fighting as a whole is very interesting the way that it's changed. Historically, if you wanted to go back to early times of man, it was very important to be a good fighter. Because you were fighting for real things, like your village, like your life, like the life of your family and the people of your tribe. Now, if you lose a fight, you don't really lose anything. Maybe you lose a little prestige and a little bit of money, but you're not really fighting for something. And, they used to really fight for things. It was important that you had good fighters in your village for this very reason, in case you were invaded. That doesn't exist anymore. So now a promoter has to throw something out there and act like we're fighting a belt. Okay, I'm going to put this belt out there. Now, in prehistoric times, you were fighting for land and life of loved ones. You were fighting for your ideologies and your belief in your geographical location and real estate. Now you're fighting for a belt, but you have to have something. You have to put something out there to make everybody go, oh, this is so important that we'll put everything on the line for it. And over time, promoters have been successful that now we have made people dedicate their lives to winning that belt, when the reality was that's not what people used to fight for. And if you lose that match and you don't succeed in getting that belt, you haven't really lost anything. Maybe your ego is bruised or, again, like I said, maybe a little bit of prestige and a couple of bucks. But you're not actually fighting the way that it used to be. And I know what you mean to be that exhausted. And I could only imagine what it was back in those times on the battlefield when it's like, hey, I'm not just going to concede this night. I have to concede my life because I'm so tired. But people did. I mean, exhaustion is that real of a thing. And not very many athletes ever have to deal with that.
Yeah, you took it to a whole different level. But that's an interesting speaking point for sure.
Jim Rome had asked me. I was on one of his panels one time. And I was there with a basketball guy and Brendan Adamaje, who a world champion, Super Bowl champion with the Ravens. And Rome asked us, well, who's the toughest athletes? Who are the toughest? And the basketball guy said, well, I think it's a hockey player. And he had an example that had, like, just happened that weekend where some guy's finger got all bent back and he went back in the game. And the basketball guy was really impressed with it. With that, and Adamaje, who said, well, it's MMA guys. It's not even a question. Then he turned to me, and I think he expected me to say MMA guys. And I gave an answer that they all rolled their eyes at and thought I was kidding because I said marathon runners. And he's like, well, how could you possibly say that? But for what I respect, which is a guy who's exhausted but pushes through it, that's what toughness is to me. It's not who beat you to the punch or landed the harder shot or who fell down or who the judges said. For me, it's the guy that can go when he doesn't want to go anymore. And those marathon runners particularly impressed me because they don't have an opponent against them. It's literally them against themselves. And you'll hear fighters talk about that and say, the only person I have to fight is myself. And nobody knows what in the hell they mean because a fighter never elaborates on it. Well, what he's talking about is I want to quit the absolute entire time, but I have to battle with myself to not quit and to push forward so that I have an opportunity to make the other guy quit. That's what they're talking about. And I've just always thought some of these marathon runners are doing 28 and 30 miles that are so exhausted and could stop at any point and no one would even know. They would blend into the crowd and you'd never even know what happened. There's not a ton of ego on the line there. But they push through anyway, step after step, mile after mile, dehydration, whatever the weather is, trying to grab water or a banana from some stranger on the side of the road. I just thought, and I still do, that it's impressive. And when I said it to Rome, he thought I was doing it tongue-in-cheek, but I really meant it. But do you know what I mean by that? You'd have to go through that's purely intrinsic.
I do.
No outside competitor. You against yourself, step for step. That's a very impressive thing.
I can't speak on that because I don't agree with you. You know, I've been in situations before in a wrestling match where I was just so tired it hurt my body to keep going. My question to you, because I know you've been there, would you rather there not be a break? Would you rather it be 15 minutes? Does that break help at all?
That break hurts. It hurts. It stomps momentum. I mean, even in practice, it's the hardest thing in the world to practice, to cool down for any amount of time than to rev back up. It's a really hard thing. And even mentally, if you could just push through whatever it was and they didn't stop down, would make it a little bit easier, I think. I think that would be easier. Now, with that said, I've never done it. I've never had a fight where they didn't have breaks. I didn't fight in that time period where they just turned them loose and they went. You know, that ended around, 95? I think even by 95, because that was ultimate time, they had rounds by then. So I think that one long duration match was like 93 to 94, and they did away with it. And I had my debut in 97. So I don't know a damn thing about it. But in my mind, it would be better to just go, not even have to clock watch, not have to think, okay, if I scored more points than this guy and the judges might not have to do any of that math, just go out and do the match, I think would be a relief. And that's how practices are. And practices are obviously easier, but you're also removing stress from the environment. You enter stress into an environment, you're going to get a guy tired a lot faster. But I think without the break would be better. You know what I got to do is I got to do something with danger. Can you watch Danger?
I love Danger.
You know, if you're a pet lover, and I know that you are, and I am, you're going to love this. Established in 2011, BarkBox. BarkBox, 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 is committed to making dogs happy, and they work with local and independent businesses to achieve this. In fact, they only work with vendors who also care deeply about the health and happiness of dogs. BarkBox is concerned with all dogs, even those who don't have a human to call their own. They support shelters, rescues, and nonprofits across the U.S. that help dogs find their forever homes. They've also learned a ton about what engages dogs. Aside from the unique and fun paw products from local vendors found in each BarkBox, the company itself designs many of their own products through their Bark & Company brand. Their paw pick the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs. This includes dogs with allergies. Now, Joel, let me tell you how this works. BarkBox, you go sign up for it. Every month, they're going to deliver a box to your door for your dog. It's going to have, from treats to toys, for things that a pet would love. It comes right to the house. You sign up one time. Here's what's fun. You don't know what's going to be in the box. You do not know for sure what's going to be in the box. They're going to tell you what treats, what's toys. And the reason is they can't. These guys are constantly making new stuff. They're making the best, the healthiest, the funnest stuff that dogs love, from toys to treats. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's great. I also think that danger, you know, I used to have a dog named Sweetness, and he was a black lab, and he was with me every step of my life other than when they put me in the box for a minute. I wish I would have had BarkBox then, because as much as I love Sweetness, one of the things I hated was going to the store for him all the time, picking up different stuff. So that would have been really, really cool for Sweetness, and when I got Danger this week.
It's fun for Danger. Listen, anybody that wants this, go to getbarkbox.com/chael. Sign up. Enter a little bit of information, whether you got a small dog, medium dog, big dog. Just enter what you've got there. Enter the program that you want every 30 days. Little special treat for your dog. Go to getbarkbox.com/chael.
Hey, everyone. This is Sean Wheelock inviting you to check out our new MMA podcast, Sean Funky and the Baddest Man, right here on Podcast One. Every week, I'll be with welterweight titleist Ben Funky Askren and the baddest man on the planet, Joe Warren, to take you inside the sport of MMA. So join us every Wednesday for all new episodes of Sean Funky and the Baddest Man. Download and listen at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and subscribe on iTunes.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
I remember in the back of the dealership when Matt Lindland was training for, I believe, either the Nationals or the World Championship, and Brad Varian was out training with him, and it was the first time that I had ever watched anybody do a quit match. And these guys wrestled Greco, and the only way you could win was to quit. And
make the other guy quit.
Yeah, they went an hour. They went an hour, and then they kind of both called it all good, and I was blown away by how in the hell did they do that. I don't know, but it is a real, you could see DC, or you could see Rumble being in that position the last fight. When he went out to the third round, he was physically exhausted. He was not going to win that fight. He wasn't going to finish that fight.
No, wait, what round did you say?
The third.
Okay, it ended in the second. It's about a 7.5 minute fight. It's about a 7.5 minute fight, and one of the things that Rumble had, your point is still the same, though. I got it. But for our listeners, so they don't go out there and correct you, I'll just do it now. The one thing that Rumble had that worked tremendously against him was he dropped Daniel in the first round. If you ever drop a guy and you think the fight is over and you have that chemical release of excitement and celebration, to restart is so incredibly challenging. To do that on the spot in the same, because you'll hear guys talk about adrenaline dumps. You'll hear Joe Rogan and some announcers talk about that. Nobody really knows what that means. I know what it means, but the listeners don't really know what that means. It's a real thing, and there's a couple of ways to have them. But one of the surest ways to have it is to think you've got the jaws of victory right at your grasp, and then to have that taken away from you and find out, oh no, I got another 21 minutes left. And that did work against AJ. Now, you also said something in your original analysis of AJ that I want to speak on, where you said you think he learned something from that first fight, and essentially that he'll preserve his energy. Conor McGregor lost to Nate Diaz and said, I did not preserve my energy, which was a very nice way of saying I got tired and I quit. And he said, I'm going to fight this next fight at a different pace and preserve my energy. And I just thought, you know what? You're saying you got tired and you're saying you quit. Now we're going to do the same thing again, 3.5 months separated. Doesn't work that way. Physiology just doesn't work. You can't do that. But he did. He did go out. He changed his style. He didn't put his foot on the gas. He started kind of point fighting with some of those leg kicks and some of those punches. He ate up some clock so that he could get deeper into the fight, and he did correct it. So when I tell you that I've seen these guys fight before and I've already seen the outcome and AJ's going to be – that's historically, there are some things you could point to poke an hole into my argument. And Conor McGregor is a fine example because he told us all openly, I ran out of energy – I couldn't go on. I'm going to change that in the second fight. But he actually did it. A lot of guys say it, and then they come out and they do the same thing. He actually did it.
Did you ever have a wrestling match where you got run over, whether you got pinned or beat by, let's say, 8 or 9 points, and you came off the mat and you said, I can beat that guy?
Yeah.
And the next time you run right through him?
Yes.
I believe that is where Rumble's mindset has been, and that's a powerful mindset to be at, to not think you can beat him, to know, hey, I can beat that guy. I want that do-over. And I do believe that's his mindset. That's where he's been for the last, 2 years. And I don't really think this is going to be a competitive fight.
Okay, and it may not be, but would you speculate that if it's not competitive and it goes Rumble's way, that it ends in a knockout fairly quickly? First couple of rounds,
yes.
But Anthony finds that opening, he lands that. I mean, he's put so many guys down. Guys with ever bit as good a chin as Daniel Cormier. Not the wrestling ability, but ever bit as good of a chin. Glover comes to mind. Ever bit as can take a shot that Cormier can. Couldn't take Rumble's. I mean, came underneath with that uppercut, boom, he tagged him, and that was that. But it must end that way if Rumble's going to win. So when I give an analysis to the fans, because I'm always thinking about them betting, I'm thinking about they're putting their money and I'm going to influence them. But where my mind goes is who is most likely to win a decision in the hardest possible worst outcome, which is they have to fight all damn night long. Who is most likely to win? I don't know if that's the right mindset, but that's where my mind goes. Before I give an analysis, if they were to go a decision, I think all of us would have to agree 99% that's going to go to D.C. A decision is going to go to D.C.
I agree. In addition, a lot of what I'm saying is based on I believe that D.C. is on his way down. And one of the reasons he's on his way down is he has had championship rounds in championship fights at AKA at the gym that he should have never had, and it's going to end up taking some time off of his career. You can only scale the mountain so many times, and I believe at his age with that body type, I believe his skills are being diminished. So if he comes out there and he runs through Rumble, I take it all back. And I'll tell you, I'm wrong.
Yeah, I got you. Well, and you will be wrong. You won't have to tell me. You'll be. I mean, this is all recorded. One of us is going to be wrong, but I can definitely see it your way. I mean, I hear everything you're saying about AJ. I don't dismiss him whatsoever. But that is where my mind goes. In a worst case scenario, which is this gets long and drug on, and it comes down to who can keep pushing. It does favor Daniel in my argument. So that's why I'm going to go in that direction. I'll tell you this: you bring up the AKA, and yes, they're having some very hard rounds in there. Don't forget, on either side of him, Daniel's got a world champion. So he's got Luke Rockhold down a weight class, one of his main sparring partners, up a weight class. He's got Cain Velasquez, both world champions. Then he sits in the middle, world champion. Hard room.
Well, and then there's killers in there that we don't even know.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I name drop those guys just so the fans can go, holy smokes. Yeah, he's going with Rockhold and then Cain. Sure. Yeah, throw plenty of other killers in there. One thing about Dan, he doesn't wear headgear when he spars. That drives me crazy. I don't know why he doesn't, but he doesn't, and he should.
You're the only one in the gym that does.
Yeah, and I don't know why other guys don't. I mean, Clayton wouldn't let you on the mat without it. I learned a habit out of it. You put the headgear on, I don't get cut in practice. I feel like my head's good when, for life in general, let alone to go into a fight and come down here and talk to you clearly. I don't know if the headgear is to be credited for that or if that's a superstition. I mean, even amateur boxing, if you watch these last Olympic Games in Rio, amateur boxing did away with the headgear, but they did away with it for safety. They argued some argument successfully that the headgear makes it more dangerous. I don't know the argument, so I won't tell you what it is, but there was some kind of an argument around it, which, I can't relate to. But I think you can make a fair point that Daniel is, whenever his career ends, whether that's 5 years from now or 5 months from now, it will be shortened because of how hard he goes in the practice room. But I think you could also make the argument that he made it all the way to the world championship because of how hard he goes in the practice room. Training matters. You got to go hard. I mean, what's the perfect balance? You tell me.
That's the million-dollar question. What is the perfect balance? I know for you, for you as somebody that's, you know, watched your entire career, that intensity that you've been shown lately is beautiful. And I've never watched you have that before. So whatever you are personally doing, whatever's twisted up inside your head right now, that has that animal training, man, keep it up, because that there's nothing wrong with that. Now, you're also, you know, you're also better primarily than a lot of guys in the room. So you can keep that intensity. Whereas if you were in the AKA room with all world champions right next to you, you can't do that every day. Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure. Thank you. There was a compliment in there for me. Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, I do see what you're saying. You know, it does matter who you go with, and you got to up the intensity. I mean, one way to keep yourself safe in sparring is you got to match that guy's intensity. You know, you got to do what he's doing and then hope that only goes so high and you both can spar as opposed to fight. But yeah, I do hear what you're saying. You know, you have a Cain Velasquez at 80% of Cain is still a very dangerous guy, and you got to deal with that. Whereas if you brought in a guy with less experience and less power and cardio than Cain, maybe he could go 100%. It'd be a dick move if he did, but maybe he could, and that would still only equal 40% of Cain. Right? It's the million-dollar question. Yeah. You get all twisted up on it all the time, but that's where I still believe bring in the right padding. Bring in the heavy gloves. Make sure your mouthpiece is in. Throw those headgear on. Put those knee pads on. If you're in a room that allows elbows, man, put those elbows on. It's just you got to make sure you do it right, because you will shorten your career.
Now, I will tell you this, you know, having watched you guys back in the back of the dealership spar hard rounds, and then watching you guys go at Gracie Baja, man, they're getting down back there too. I mean, there's some hard goes. And I like that. I mean, I would rather you not spar at all, zero, than some of the stuff that, you know, 50 or 60% and you call it sparring. I'm like, take your gloves off and go dance. You know, that is not sparring. You're not going to, what's it for? So I love that intensity I've been seeing. But to this case, to where Daniel is, I we'll know. We'll know here tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I do have I gave you a favor for some of the nonsense that you dealt with in Kansas, in Kankakee. I will bet that right now that somebody misses weight today.
I'm not going to bet that. I'm not going to take that bet. Why do they keep missing weight? I mean, it just keeps happening. It happened at Bellator over the weekend with Sanchez. Sanchez had moved up a weight class, moved up 10 pounds higher than he'd ever fought at before, and still missed weight by 4 pounds. I don't know why that happens, but boy, we keep seeing that.
It's my belief is it's the water load. Not everybody can. If you break on a water load, you're hit. You're done. You know, the way that weight cutting was up until, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, you got yourself down to a spot you can get to in 36 hours. You're going to eat very little, you're going to suck out the water, and you're going to make weight. Now, the math has completely changed where what people are putting in their systems and everything, you're drinking all of that water. If you have a break, if you have a food break, and you mess up the metabolism or whatever the hell, the equation that lets you guys cut all that weight somewhere along there, you go from being 7 over to 13 over, you're hit. You're not coming back from that. Whereas in my day, if you broke,
Let's say you were within six, you broke, you went back to 10. Man, it's going to be a bear, but you can get there. You know, the reason people miss weight 99% of the time is because they mentally broke. It's that simple.
You want to know who doesn't miss weight? The women. If there's either gender that should be allowed to miss some weight because of what you said for water retention, basic physiology of the opposite sexes there, it would be the women. They make weight. The men are missing weight, and you're only seeing it in fighters. You don't see it in boxers. You don't see boxers missing weight. You want to know what else? NCAA wrestling tournament just happened. How many guys entered? 150 guys entered. Do you want to know how many guys were scratched for not making weight?
I would say none.
Zero. I can't remember a time happened.
Not only that, is they make weight Thursday, Friday, and I believe they have to make Saturday if they're still...
Every single day you wrestle.
Yeah, granted they get a pound each day, but that is nothing.
No, no, no. You're still making weight. They make it three times in 1 week. They are not under contract to do so. They are not paid to do so. They are not under penalty of reputation or purse. They just make weight. I can't remember a time a guy at the NCAA tournament or the Olympic Games or the World Championships didn't make weight. Sure, it's happened. I'm sure it's happened, but I follow the sport closely. I don't know of a time. You only see it in these fighters. And it's not to say a female fighter hasn't missed weight. I get it. I'm just saying percentage-wise, it is very peculiar that we do see it in our sport, and we particularly see it with the males, and I don't know why, and I don't know why it keeps happening, and you don't see it in these other sports. You don't see it with boxing and wrestling. Yeah. Find examples. There's only a couple of sports, Joel, that you have to weigh in for. There's only a couple of frames of reference that I can bring up. But when I bring up boxing and wrestling, the only two other sports I know of that you got to make weight to go out and perform, they don't miss weight.
Yeah, I would. One of the fans out there, let me know what the streak is for UFC events of people missing weight. They should have that as a bet, actually, because man, I'd be willing to bet somebody's gonna miss weight.
Yeah,
today
they do,
and
take
and you're not
on
even
it.
Taking the bet. So the co-main event is very interesting.
I think the co-main event is fun. Let me get to that in a second. I want to tell you about something. So Audible.com is a premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from in every genre, from thrillers to business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices. You can listen anytime and anywhere. Go to audibletrial.com/jail. Sign up now. They're going to give you the first month for free. I have a point, though, Joel. I want the listeners, okay, they get a month for free. What I want, though, is recommendations. I want you to tweet me, at Chael Sonnen, and make a recommendation to me. But here's what I want. I want a book that's entertaining, but it's got to be true. I'm not into fiction. I want to be able to learn something in exchange for listening to it. I don't like to read, Joel. I love the knowledge that's in books, but I don't like to read them. I get bored. I don't like to sit there. I don't even sit on a couch very comfortably, right? I always put my feet up. I really like that they'll read the book to you. It reminds me of being a child where the teacher would do that or a parent would do that. I can gain the entertainment and the value, but I don't have to do it. I want to tell you something, though. So fans, do that for me. Go to audibletrial.com/jail. Go enjoy your free period. In exchange for you getting a free period, you got to tweet me and give me a book. So I did, it was called Empire. I did Empire over the weekend, Joel, which is a book from Audible. It's a true story about Howard Hughes. What do you know about Howard Hughes? Scale of 1 to 10.
3.
Really?
2. 1 maybe.
Okay, so you at least know who he is.
Sure.
Okay. He was believed to be a crazy man. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that after this book. It kind of changed my perspective. But Howard Hughes was a billionaire back when that was pretty rare. He was an influential guy. He got involved in politics and business and all these other things. Started what? TWA. That's the airline he started. Howard Hughes Tools. I mean, he bought every fast food chain the state of Texas ever put out. If a fast food chain was created in the state of Texas, he bought it, and he got them all. There wasn't one that got away from him. Business guy, but he was a recluse. He only lived in penthouse suites of hotels, and he wouldn't be seen by anybody. So somebody came out after Hughes, very well known, one of the most, kind of like Donald Trump, even before he was president, where he was a successful businessman, but then he was known nationwide. He was getting on covers of magazines. He was really seen. Howard Hughes was the head of multiple companies, okay, billionaire, and he wouldn't be seen. Nobody saw him. So this guy came out and claimed to have written a autobiography on Howard Hughes that was authorized by Howard Hughes. Now, this journalist who ended up going to prison, he was a straight-up liar. It's all a fraud. This journalist hung his hat on the argument that Howard Hughes doesn't come out, he doesn't do any more media, he won't talk to anybody. This guy must have lost his mind. It's the only way he can do that. I can speculate on this guy, claim that I got the rights to this book, sell this book, do wonderful with it, make a name off it, and Hughes is never going to come out and refute it. And if he doesn't refute it, it means he's agreeing with it. It means I can make any claim that I want. And the guy gained major traction. He created major speculation. There was tabloids everywhere basically saying what this guy was saying, which is the guy's crazy. The only reason he wouldn't be seen is he's crazy. You know, Richard Simmons is going through some of that right now. Richard Simmons just made his first public appearance like over the weekend, but hadn't been seen in over a year. So now you can just speculate as to why not. And if Howard Hughes doesn't come out and speak up, then it becomes true. It just, this must be true, or why wouldn't he deny it? So Congress, or the Senate rather, ends up fining him $685 million for something he did with TWA, and he would not come in and testify. Now, it was never specifically stated if he has social anxiety or some type of a public disorder, but he would do deals where, like, he was doing a deal with some bank out of the East Coast that had flown out to see him in California, was in the hotel. He wouldn't see them, and they said, we can't give you the money unless we meet you face-to-face. But if you meet us face-to-face, we'll give you the money. It's as simple as that. We're not going to credit check any. We just need to meet you. For whatever reason, this was their criteria, and Hughes said, whatever we're doing, we can do over the telephone. Would not meet with them. So the Senate fines him this money because they think that he's a fraud and he's lost his mind, and how's he running this country? He's crazy. All based on speculation and tabloids, but he had never come out to argue against it, so therefore it became true, right? Like any statement, you see this all the way in our sport of promotion. If somebody makes a statement, it's true until the other guy comes out and says, no, it's not. And sometimes the only way to prove it, now you got to go fight over it. But this is how the world works. We see this on all levels. But this happened to Howard Hughes. So the Senate wants him to come in and testify, which he would not do, but he agreed to call in. So he calls in, and he was ever bit of sound state in mind. He impressed them. He impressed them all. The author was then dismissed and eventually imprisoned, did like a year and 5 months or something. But it was just a really interesting story called Empire. It was a Howard Hughes story. He was definitely eccentric. He was definitely rich. But my takeaway, and this is just from one reader, okay, I don't know the guy, I was impressed with him. I thought, hey, his story hasn't been told. This is privately a genius. They said, like, I'll give you one more example. They said that he would, the people that were close to him, and he only had an inner circle he would work with. He wouldn't see anybody. This guy made major motion pictures and films. Hell's Angels, just by example, all came from him. Wouldn't see any of his talent, wouldn't see anybody, but he would sit in these penthouses and run his business. And they said that he would sit there naked at times, and that even had like a 4-month period where he didn't shower, comb his hair, or cut his nails. Later, it kind of came out against speculation, but as to why, it's like, no, he wasn't this crazy hermit that had lost his mind. He had been in a plane crash, a number of them for that matter, but he was seriously injured and he was suffering from something. They even had a medical term. I couldn't pronounce it to you right now, but that caused him extreme pain. And that perhaps putting his clothing on, just the weight of the clothing, would hurt him so bad that he had to sit naked. Therefore, he couldn't be seen. He couldn't shower because the water would hurt so bad. He couldn't clip his nails because of the pain. He couldn't cut his hair. So there was almost like, oh my goodness, you know, you have one piece of evidence that draws you to a conclusion. You go down that road completely. Okay, this guy's a weirdo hermit that's lost his mind, that's sitting in a room naked, not bathing and eating nothing but ice cream. But then you get confronted with this other piece of evidence, which is, well, he may be suffering from something that nobody had considered because it's so rare, people don't know about it. You just learned something.
I love the story. I do want you to transition into the co-main event now, coming off of that, because I would not have an idea how to do it.
Transition. Let's just talk about it. Listen, so you've got, I believe Weidman to be the best 185-pounder out there. For me, he's the best. Now, he isn't the best athlete. That goes to Yoel Romero. And you saw that when they fought. Weidman was getting him. Weidman was doing everything right, landing his shots, getting in on his takedowns, whether he was finishing or not. But Weidman was doing everything right. And then, boom, you saw the athlete come. The explosive, powerful athlete that is Yoel Romero. I like Weidman in the fight because I think he gets to the leg. And I think if he can get on top of Musasi, and I turn back to when King Mo fought Musasi, that's what he did. But that's about the only way you're going to beat that son of a bitch. Musasi is a scary fight, and if Musasi is to win, it's going to be in devastating fashion, which would give Chris, who I'm arguing to you, is the best middleweight out there. It would give him three consecutive losses. Now, a little something happened in every one of those, right? Remember the Rockhold fight where he got exhausted and tried that spinning back kick and then was just too tired to get up? The Yoel Romero fight that
he's
winning
the fight
until he's not, which a lot of guys have suffered with Yoel Romero. And now you go into Musasi, but Musasi is so impressive. He was in Bodog. He fought Casey Uskol in Bodog. I was with Bodog, so I was exposed to Musasi before the rest of the world was. You know, he went on his run through Japan. He was going up to heavyweight. Who did he beat? Mark Hunt? Did he beat Mark Hunt? He beat somebody at heavyweight that was really impressive. Had some exhibition where he was grappling, fighting, or sparring session with Fedor, and he's just been a really impressive guy. Then he comes down to light heavyweight, goes on a great run, makes it to the finals of Strikeforce where he fought Mo for the title, comes over to the UFC, does a great job. Now he's down at 185. He's a handful. Beat Dan Henderson. He's got these hands. He's really hard to hit. There's a lot to deal with there, but the blueprint on how to beat him is out there with the Mo fight, has the same skills as Chris Weidman when it comes to powerful takedowns and staying on top. That's Chris's way to win. I personally think he's going to do that, but that's a hard fight. That's a world title fight. World title fight. Main event fight in most eras.
I don't know if Chris can blanket him for 15 minutes. I think he needs to. My concern is that Chris had his on-off button shut off two fights in a row, and generally when that starts happening, it's an epidemic. You do not have as a fighter, you're going to keep going to the same storm. You're going to walk through fire because that's what you've done your entire career. But now you can't get there where you've always been before. You can't take those shots. It's just your body, your head, your mind is now going to protect you for yourself. I don't like. Very rarely will you see a guy lose two times in a row in devastating fashion and then have him come out and look like what he looked like before.
And it would have to be a world championship caliber Chris Weidman, because that's how good Musasi is. Mm-hmm. You can put any ranking next to his name you want. But at that weight class right now, they got five guys that are straight up number one contender, period. Musasi's one of those guys on a run. You got Yoel Romero. He's one of those guys on there. You got Jacare Souza. He's one of those guys. You got Chris Weidman, you got Tim Kennedy just stepped aside. I think Kelvin Gastelum is now in that weight class officially. I mean, number one contender, any one of those guys. So put whatever number you want because you have to. You have to fill out the box. But that's how good Weidman will have to beat him. I got to remind you of one thing. Weidman did not go out. He was dominated by Luke Rockhold after he got exhausted. Remember, Luke sat on top of him in the mount, started raining down. The ref finally had to step in. And then in the Yoel Romero fight, he got that cut. Yoel hit that flying knee and he got that cut. So he didn't actually go to sleep where his...
That makes a big difference. That makes a huge difference.
It does make a difference in how he lost. Because if you go read about it, it will say TKO next to it. But it's like, well, no, he wasn't necessarily, messed up and stumbling around and doing the chicken legs. In the Rockhold fight, there was just no gas left in the tank. The guy got on Rockhold got on top of him and the ref had to step in. And in the Romero fight, remember, he got that bad cut. So he did stay up. So he hasn't actually suffered that same thing where he's got to go out there and question his jaw and can mm-hmm. I take it and be faced with this great striker in Musasi. I think that's a really, really hard match. I just I still do believe, for me, I need to, you know, maybe see it one more time. Maybe my opinion will change after this weekend, but I do believe he is the best. I believe that. He's not the best athlete. That goes to Romero, but he is the best fighter.
I think his great career as Musasi's had, I think he's on his defining run, and I think he's going to win the fight. And I think he's either going to win a decision or he's going to stop him.
Guess where Bellator is this weekend?
Amsterdam.
No.
Italy.
Yep, Italy this weekend. Next weekend, go over to Budapest, Hungary. I'm going. I've never been to either. I've never been to Italy or Budapest. I don't know what the market's like. I don't know how they're doing, but I know Bellator's excited. So whatever they know about ticket sales and the buzz in those towns, they're pretty pumped up. Miss Brittany's coming. Little Maniac's staying at home. So chalk it up to a vacation, if you will. Going to be working for me, but I'm going to make sure she has a good time. That's what my weekend looks like.
Well, I'm excited about that. Who has the monster?
Grandmas will be splitting time.
All right. Well, I am up for, if they need to tap out for a couple hours, please have them get a hold of me because I do love that boy.
You jump in on that?
Absolutely. I got 2 hours.
That's a
handful.
I mean,
I don't have a six spot, but I got two.
Hey, we broke down the main event. You took AJ, I took Cormier. You never did give a prediction for your co-main. Who do you have between Weidman and Sausage? Just straight up, who wins?
I would like to wait until the fight's over for my pick. And here's why. Here's why.
Okay, I'd love to hear.
I've been pitching Rumble for 6 months, so I've got a lot of chips in on Rumble. So if I lose Rumble, I would at least like to win the co-main event. So I would like to – I don't want to lose them both. So I would like to wait until after the fight to give my pick.
I mean this as respectfully as you choose to take this. There is not 100% certainty that you could watch that fight and then make a prediction and get it right. You're likely to. It's not 100%.
Okay, so you're saying I cannot wait until the end of the fight for my pick. You want the pick right now.
You got to give it to me, right? We got nothing to bet on here.
Okay, I am taking Musasi, and I don't feel really, really, really confident about it. It's one of those things where I'm going to be happy either way.
It's a great fight.
As a fan, I got nothing but love for those two guys, but I think Musasi's going to win, and I'm rooting for him too. You know, that's a guy that's been in the middle of things for, I don't know, 10 years?
And has never got his shot. Not his fair shot. Not his time. I mean, this is a main event. Any time of the, any of the, this is a world title fight. I mean, you go back just, when was Weidman champion? Less than 2 years ago? And it literally is a title fight. Musasi deserves to be in there. Now, I'm the same way. I'm taking Weidman, but I'm not totally comfortable in it. It's a hard match. And it's hard to predict. It really does come down to, can Chris get him down?
Don't you have a Musasi story about he had a date, or somebody hooked him up on a date sometime?
I know a Musasi story. I don't want to get into what you're thinking of. Is when he was in Germany for the Musasi tender story, that whole bit.
Yeah,
it's not a great state. I mean, that's really the story. I'm out.
Okay, he's out.
I can't really turn that into anything. You get the point. He was in Germany. Whatever. You got anything?
No, I'm really excited about having Danger. I'm excited about you going to Italy, and I'm excited about the fights.
God, that's boring. Oh, I'm just excited. Everything's so wonderful.
Why don't you be excited? Why don't you think about the chance that you get to see your idol, your hero, DC, in less than 24 hours?
I don't know where that comes from. Hey, I'll tell you one thing about Daniel. He's not going to miss weight.
No, he's not going to miss weight. He won't be him. It won't be, well, Rumble's miss weight. Rumble's not going to miss weight either.
You know, there's a rumor out there that Daniel Cormier missed weight for the 2008 Olympics. Have you heard this rumor?
Yeah.
It is not true. That is not true. Are you under the impression that he did?
Well, he didn't wrestle.
Right, and it was largely reported that it was because he missed weight. Factually incorrect. He made weight. And was so unhealthy, and there was like a kidney issue, they pulled him out of the tournament. But it was told to everybody that he missed weight and was scratched from the tournament. Not actually true. He did get on the scale. He got his draw. He made the weight. Thought I would share that with you.
I'm glad you did. I've got a big surprise for you.
What do you got?
We're going to have a studio when you get back.
Really?
Yep.
Where?
Doesn't matter. It's a surprise.
All right. I don't even know how to respond. I love surprises. I will look forward to seeing that.
Or torturing me because it didn't happen.
I'm sure it will be as organized as the Key and Kiki show, and I'm sure Vinny is putting it together now. So until the studio, and until next Wednesday, enjoy your weekend, everybody. Enjoy the fights. I'm Chael, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, this is Richard Marks, the host of Song Talks right here on Podcast One. Listen right now to my interview with Jane Lynch.
A cappella? Man, this most beautiful arrangement. It was just...
By the way, thank you for saying a cappella and not a cappello.
Or avocado, someone asked me once. Yeah. Can you do that avocado?
Check out Song Talks every Wednesday at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.